It is. So when we said assume P is 0.1, it's really the same as saying assume P is equal to, you know, H naught, that P equals 0.1. And what we're told is what's the probability of obtaining a sample proportion. So that bolded sample proportion tells us that's talking about P hat. So in order for us to answer this question of what's the probability of getting a sample proportion P hat greater than 0.5, we're actually transforming both sides of this equation. So we take P hat minus P naught over the square root of P naught Q naught over N on both sides. This has now become a Z. This is that Z. And on the right-hand side, we're taking 0.05, which is P hat, minus the hypothesized value of 0.1, dividing by the standard error that we get, taking the square root of 0.1 times 0.9 over 54. So we're just taking it from the sample statistic, which is P hat, and transforming it to a Z. Questions on that? What else could it have been? No, so just to be clear on our terminology, so when it says assume the population proportion, that word, population proportion, is always, it never has a hat. It's the population parameter. So, but when we talk about sample proportion of values of 0.05 or larger, it's basically asking this question. It's saying, out of all possible samples of size 54, we have a sampling distribution of P hats, and if we can assume that the mean of that of those P hats is this true proportion 0.1, then we also have a standard deviation of the P hats that's going to be based on 0.1 times 0.9 over the sample size. And the question is asking, how likely is it that we would see sample proportions of 0.05, meaning these values to the left, or something larger? And that translates into a Z statistic of negative 1.22 or something larger. Negative 1.22. So we're asking, how likely is it that you'd get a sample proportion of 0.05 or bigger if the truth was assumed to be a population proportion of 0.1? So how do we answer that question? We transform it to a Z, and that Z is negative 1.22. Okay. Well, I would think, yeah, so there shouldn't be too much rounding that goes on here because we were given these exact values. So part of it could have been if one was storing in one's calculator these values or not. So if I do this, I get exactly negative 1.22, but if you had copied the numerator down and then divided by the denominator, there may have been some slight rounding. I would say don't be alarmed by slight rounding, because if you looked at the options, you knew you had a negative sign, but it was really pretty far off from negative 1.69 and from negative 0.17. So on that case, that would be the sort of a question I'd probably just say, go back and double check the calculation. But, you know, but I would go with the one that was closest, probably just because of rounding error. Okay, so then, yes. So what we have here under the conditions of having sufficient sample size, we're able to describe the sampling distribution of p hat as being approximately normal. So we're not using an approximation of the normal probability distribution for a population here. We're talking again about the sampling distribution of the sample statistic p hat as being approximately normal when our sample size, which in this case is 54, when our sample size is large enough. Okay. Is everybody okay with this? Okay, so now we're shifting gear into a different scenario. We're still thinking about those males and females and their average sleep scores, right? So everybody's getting very sleepy over the context of this discussion. But the Stata output here that you see in one page shows first a variance ratio test and then two different options for a t-test of mean ESS scores. So let's just look at this first one. So before we even answer any questions, yes? Did I miss a question? Oh, I wonder where 14. Oh, here's 14. Okay, let's look at 14. Okay, thank you. It snuck in here. Here's 14. In figure 1 is displayed a QQ plot, quantile-quantile plot of ESS scores in males versus females. It's very similar to what you did. You looked at BMI in males versus females in a problem set. So this is now just looking at ESS scores. What's the correct interpretation of this plot? So here is looking at males. It's a sample of males versus the quantiles for the sample of females. These are observed data that was given on the summary statistics before. So let's just go through each of these. The ESS scores appears to be normally distributed in both males and females. We can only talk about normal distribution when we are doing what? So a Q-norm plot. Q-norm means we're, for instance, looking at the ESS score in males versus the normal distribution, or looking at the Q-norm plot, looking at quantiles in the observed data for females versus what we'd expect under the normal distribution. Do you see any plot versus the normal distribution here? No. So we're not able to talk about normal distribution. It says here the ESS distributions in B for males and females are identical. If they were identical, then these dots would say the quantiles for each, the 50th and the 50th and 75th and 75th, 90th, 90th, they would all be the same. So we would expect dots to fall exactly on the straight line if they were identical. And they're not falling on the straight line, so I would say that answer is incorrect. Only the variance of ESS appears to differ for males and females. So when we have points that are above the line, that's suggesting that the means are different, meaning that we're shifted in location. If we see it fanning out a bit from the straight line, that would suggest the variances are different. So it's not just the variance that's different. These points are also above the straight line, suggesting it's shifted in location and that the means are different. So we were looking for this answer. Both the mean and variance appear to differ by sex. And if we look at the last one, it's talking again about ESS scores appear to be normally distributed only in females. We can't do that because we don't have a Q-norm plot. Yes? So let's look at the maybe possibilities that you would be looking for. So there's one that says only the variance. And there's one that says both the mean and the variance. There's not one that says only the mean. If there was, should we put it in as number F, only the mean? If only the means were different, then if we were looking at this straight line, then we would expect that all of the points would be completely parallel to that straight line, completely parallel if they were just shifted in location. Yes? So what I mean by fanning out is what I'll talk about next. So what we're seeing here, we don't have an answer that says only the mean, but if it did, then you would have eyeballed this and have said that these points were completely parallel to this line. But what we're seeing is there, it's starting off parallel, and then what's happening? See, the fanning out is that in these upper quantiles, there's more spread. It's not parallel to that straight line of identity. It's fanning out a bit. So if we had had a response that said only the mean, you might have circled that, because maybe you would not consider this to be extreme fanning out. We respect that. That's why we did not give this as an answer, right? So we had to know that the means were going to be different because this was above the straight line of identity, and then the hovering around the straight line is, you know, beginning to diverge, if you will, or fan out, and that's why the answer was not just the variance, but both the mean and the variance are different. Yes. But they're not on.
Mm-hmm.
Well, actually, let's really look at this. You might say that some of these points are on the line, but you know, it's pretty definitive that the majority of the points are not on the line.
Okay.
Right. So, right. So think. So we're not doing. No, so if you have, you know, ones that are sort of hovering about this line, that's going to say no matter what the shape, and that's why I'm making these as the shape is similar, but they're shifted in mean. They're shifted in mean. That would have been when we have completely parallel lines. If we actually had a shape, so we have here, these are shifted just in location. That would be reflected in this parallel line. If we had differences in variance, then we would expect both these to be off of the line of identity, but also there would be some difference in terms of flaring out from the parallel nature of that line. Okay. So I think the point to keep in mind is that this did not have F, which said only the mean, because I think if it had said only the mean, many of you could have said, well, these are a bunch of different points. There's only 54 or something, and that you could make an argument that these were roughly parallel. But since that was not an option, they're not on the straight line. They're hovering off the line, and they're flaring out a little bit. And that's why we would go with both the mean and variance appear to be different. And none of the other three are even possibilities because we're not comparing to a normal distribution. So that was the missing 14. So now should I look at the output? I'm going to. So the output has first the variance ratio test that we get using the SD command. So this is testing a hypothesis that the variances in males and females in terms of ESS score are the same versus an alternative that the variances are not the same or are different. We're just going to look at first eyeballing it. Standard deviations are 4.4 in one group, 4.7 in the other. Pretty similar. But what does the test tell us? The test tells us the p-value of 0.66. We fail to reject. Conclude that based on our data, the underlying population variances appear to be the same. Yeah. So that would lead us to decide to go with the two-sample t-test for a hypothesis about equality of the means in males and females as opposed to the unequal variance assumption. So we're really going to spend our time looking at the appropriate panel for the t-test, and should we interpret it now before we go to the questions? So that, I think that's always a good idea. So first of all, the two-sided test, that mu 1 minus mu 2 equals 0, which is the same as mu 1 equals mu 2 versus an alternative that it's not equal to 0, gives a p-value of 0.5, meaning not significantly different. And if we eyeball them, 7.18, 7.81, what's the difference in means? It's only a little bit more than half a point. So it's not statistically significantly different. Confidence interval for the true difference. So this is the 95% confidence interval for mu 1 minus mu 2. What do you notice about it? Overlap 0. And so both inspecting the confidence interval as well as looking at this t-test says no statistically significant in average ESS scores between males and females. So now we're on to 15. So based on the 54 women aged 85 and older, a 95% confidence interval for the mean ESS score, meaning in the population of women, mu, is given in the output as 5.97 to 8.40. Should we look at that? Which one was females? They're coded 0. There's 54 of them. Here's the confidence interval for the mean for females, 5.97 to 8.40. So how would we interpret that? Do we say the probability is 0.95 that the interval will overlap the mean ESS for women 85 years and older, one states under a null hypothesis? First of all, does that even sound very much like English? So, but for a confidence interval, do we need a null hypothesis? Confidence interval is based on the data. It does. We can use it we can inspect it to see if our hypothesized value falls in it, but we don't use a null hypothesis, so this is false. We have 95% confidence in this interval in the following sense. Upon repeated sampling, if indeed we took all possible samples of size 54, approximately 95% of those constructed confidence intervals will overlap the true mean ESS for women 85 years and older. So this is our repeated sampling notion of confidence interval. This is true. This is true. So, upon repeated sampling, approximately 5% of confidence intervals will overlap the true mean. So this should have said 95%. That's why this is false. The probability is 0.95 that the true mean is included in the interval. This is false because it should say the probability is 0.95 that this interval overlaps the true mean. I know those sound the same, but they're not. So the truth is fixed. It's either in or not in the interval. It's the interval that's random. So we would say the probability is 0.95 that the interval includes the true mean. The probability is 0.95 that the this constructed interval includes the true mean. So D, as it's written, is false. And then let's look at E. The probability is 0.95 that the sample mean, X bar, is included in the interval. Well, is it the probability 0.95 that the sample mean is in the interval? How would you change that to be a true statement? How could we change E to be a true statement? Probability is 1 that the sample mean is in the interval because we construct it that way. We take X bar plus or minus the tabled, T value times the standard error of the mean. It's always in the middle of the interval. Our sample statistic has probability of 1 of being in the interval. Okay. So that was 15. We still doing okay? Do you want to take a little shake? No. You're happy just sitting there. Okay. So now we're on to 16. Just a few more. Are there any questions? 16. Suppose that the significance level alpha was set at 0.05 for a two-sided test of a null hypothesis that the difference in true population means equals zero versus an alternative that the difference in the true population means is not equals to zero. And what are we talking about? We're talking about the underlying mean ESS scores in the populations from which those women were drawn and in the populations from which the men were drawn. So from the STATA output on page 7, one would most appropriately conclude what? So if we skimmed down this, we're seeing there's assumptions of equal and unequal variances. So we'll go back to our output. And if we look at the output, we recall that what was our conclusion about equal versus unequal variance? So we got a p-value of 0.66, which will support this null hypothesis of equal variance in the variance ratio test. So our conclusion was equal variances, and that's why we decided to look in the middle panel to do the two-sample t-test with equal variances. Does that sound like a good idea? Okay. So let's go back and look at the answers. Assuming equal means in the two populations of males and females, there's a statistically higher standard deviation of ESS in males. Well, first of all, do you have to assume equal means when you're doing the variance ratio test? All that we're doing is testing variances. So this is sort of nonsensical, so that's going to be false. Assuming equal variances in the two populations of males and females, there's no statistically significant difference in mean ESS score between males and females. So assuming equal variances in that middle panel on your sheet, we saw that the test statistic to test a null hypothesis that the difference in means is zero gave us a p-value of 0.5023, suggesting a non-statistically significant result. So I think that answer looks pretty good. I'd say that so far this one is true. I would go for it. C, assuming equal variances in the two populations of males and females, there's a statistically significantly higher mean ESS in males than females. Well, first of all, the p-value in parentheses based on an alpha of 0.05 is not significant. And if it's worth talking about, where did that 0.5055 come from? It came from the unequal variance test. So that would not be appropriate. So this is false. Should we rule out D and E? Assuming equal variances, there's a statistically significantly higher mean ESS score in males. So this p-value is not statistically significant. But if we looked at where that p-value came from, it came from the one-sided test, which is still not significant. Right? So that's false. Then I think the last one is looking at assuming unequal variances, there's a statistically significantly higher mean ESS in males. Well, that was looking at the one-sided test using unequal variances, but this is not statistically significant. So most of these responses were not relevant. They were wrong. The answer was assuming equal variances based on the original variance ratio test, we see there's no statistically significant difference in mean ESS scores between males and females with a p of 0.5023. Okay, so 17 is asking you to articulate what you're doing when you have a two-sample t-test with equal variance. So it says, in the state analysis on page 7, two-sample t-test with equal variance, which of the following best describes the computation of the standard error that's used in the denominator of the test statistic? So you're told it's 0.934. In fact, where is it here? It's in this panel in the middle. So when we look at difference, we see that the negative 0.62 is really just X1 bar minus X2 bar. The standard error that's given here is the standard error of X1 bar minus X2 bar, also known as S of X1 bar minus X2 bar. So the question is, when you get this T statistic, you're taking a difference in means minus the hypothesized value of zero, and you're dividing by a standard error in the denominator, right? So instead of necessarily just remembering this, might we go to the formula page? I think we can. It's right here. So if you studied with the formula page, wow, are you seeing movement? Is it just me? Probably just me. So if we recall, there were two T statistics set up here, a Z statistic that was based on being told you knew the population variances, but one T statistic in which the pooled variance is used. This is where we would assume that the underlying population variances are the same. The other T statistic is assuming that they're not the same. So if we looked at this, what we're doing is using a common estimate of this, an estimate of this common variance that's pooling together both of them to give more accuracy, more precision. So it says, take the sample variance in males, weight it by its degrees of freedom, which is approximately the sample size, add the sample variance in females weighted by its degrees of freedom, and then divide by the total degrees of freedom. So that's a weighted average of the two sample variances. What do you think about that in English? I know it's getting late. Yes. Yeah, we are supposed to pool it.
Okay. So I'm kind of confused because of the, you know, the two options.
Right. So before, we haven't read the options yet, but when we come back to reading the options, which we can do, we were saying we've spent a lot of time saying which one would we do, to pool or not to pool. Equal variances you pool, unequal variances you keep them separate. So we had concluded based on this output that we would conclude we have equal variances. Equal variances means use this sample t-test, two-sample t-test with equal variances in which the standard error is based on pooling. And based on looking at the formula page, the way we pool it is with a weighted average of the sample variances. So if we look back at ruling out different responses, we could look at first. The first one does use the word pool, but it says pool all of the observations into a single sample and then compute a sample standard deviation from that sample. But we're using a weighted average in the pooling, so this is false. We're not just gathering them all into one sample. The next one says, pool all the observations into a single sample and compute a sample standard deviation that takes the sample standard deviation over root 54 plus sample standard deviation over root 53. And so that is also what we're not doing. We're not pooling into a single sample. The next one says, compute the sample variances separately, create a weighted average of these with weights approximately equal to the respective sample sizes, and then the standard error will be this square root of this weighted average over the square root of the total sample size. So I'll just remind you that we would have gone back to say, what are we doing? We're looking at a standard error that's beneath this root sign that takes the pooled over the sample size in the first group plus the pooled variance over the sample size in the second group. So C, which says, compute this by taking the square root of the combined or pooled over the square root of 97, is not, do we ever do that? The only time we would do the square root of 97 if we had pooled them into one sample, so that's false. Compute the sample variances separately, create a weighted average of these with weights approximately equal to the sample sizes, and then take the square root of the pooled estimate over 54 plus the pooled estimate over 43. That's what we're looking for. That's our formula for the standard error using the pooled estimate. So the answer is D. And the last one says, take a weighted average of these weights, of these sample variances with weights approximately equal to sample size, and then just take the square root of it, not accounting for the sample sizes, and so that is also false. So the word pooling was here, but it was a pooling not in the weighted average sense. It was pooling observations together to do a single calculation. So that was 17. Moving on to 18. So 18 asked you to do a computation, and then 19 and 20 are just interpretive. So 18 says, suppose alpha was set at 0.05 for a two-sided test of the null hypothesis that the difference in means equals zero versus this alternative that the difference in means is not equal to zero. Using the data in the Stata output on page 7, what's the approximate smallest absolute difference in sample means? What do we mean by sample means? X1 bar minus X2 bar. What's the smallest difference that would allow rejection of the null hypothesis? So I'm going to draw a few things. I'm going to draw the sampling distribution of X1 bar minus X2 bar, and know that it's centered at this hypothesized value of zero. And if alpha is set equal to 0.05, two-sided, then what's the area under each tail? In the rejection region, it corresponds to 0.025, 0.05 split into two tails. Good. Okay. So, but if we're setting up a test statistic, it's not the sampling distribution that we are concerned about. It's the T distribution, the T. And so we're going to look for what is the tabled T corresponding to degrees of freedom that were 95 that gives us 0.025 in each tail. Why am I saying the degrees of freedom are 95? Right, because it's the sample size is minus 2. We had 97 total minus 2. We had two samples, males and females. Okay. So if I wanted to find out what difference in sample means, had a probability in one tail of 0.025, I would also look for the tabled T statistic with 95 degrees of freedom that had 0.025 in one tail. Right? Okay, should we go to the T table? I'm going to go to the T table. Okay, so the T table, 95 degrees of freedom, Rosner doesn't give us 95. He gives us 60 and he gives us 120. So we're going to go with 60. And we're going to go with 0.025 in one tail. So that means 0.975 to the left gives 0.025. If we have 0.975 as this cumulative probability, we'd have 0.025 in the right tail. Right? So what would be the tabled value of T that corresponds to this with 95 degrees of freedom? Looks like it's pretty close to 2. Okay, so that's going to be our critical region, 2 or bigger, or negative 2 or smaller. So we'll go back to our question, which says this T is 2 or negative 2. So how does that correspond to X bar? So what is our T statistic? It takes X1 bar minus X2 bar minus the hypothesized difference, which is zero, and then we have a standard error that we already have looked at in the data. So what's the standard error of the difference in means? We've looked at it already. Go back and look at it. I've circled it here. Standard error of the difference in means is about 0.934. So we didn't have to calculate it. Seta calculated it for us, 0.934. So let's, I'm just going to move this down here. So we would have, so what we know is the value of t is going to be 2 or negative 2. Let's use 2. So we can say 2 equals x1 bar minus x2 bar minus 0 over 0.9. Let's round it to 0.93. So what are we interested in? We want to know the value of the difference in means that would lead us to reject this null. So I think we're almost there, aren't we? All that we're doing is solving for x1 bar minus x2 bar. X1 bar minus x2 bar will just be 2 times 0.93, which is about 1.8 or 1.9. So it looks like the answer here is about 1.9 units. So in other words, this allows us to say that if we observed a difference in sample means of 1.9 units or something bigger, or negative 1.9 units or something smaller, that would correspond to rejecting this in the rejection region of the table, T being 2 or bigger or negative 2 or smaller. What do you think about that? Yeah. Thumbs up? Okay. We'll keep going then. Two more questions. Two more. Ready? For questions 19 and 20, suppose that the Sleep Heart Health study researchers conduct a new study. It's bolded. New study in which a sample of spouses are recorded. So it's not bolded, but these are spouses, meaning both husband and wife together, sleeping. So the fact that this is a study of spouses means that there is a relationship or a possible interdependence in their sleep habits. It's not guaranteed, but there's that possibility. So because of the correlation between the husband and the wife, one could answer this question about how should the test statistic, which would be used for analysis of this data, differ from the method that was used in the previous investigation, which was looking at males, a separate group, independent group of males versus females. So this was meant to indicate that we had two independent samples previously, but now we have paired samples, husband and wife pairs. So if we've thought about the formula sheet again, we'd look and see that on the bottom of the second page, if we had paired data, instead of looking at a difference in two independent means, we would be interested in D bar, the mean difference. And so it boils down to a single sample of differences between husband and wife pairs. And our test statistic would be pretty much like a single sample t-test where we take d-bar minus the hypothesized value over the standard deviation of d-bar. So basically, pairing means we're reducing it to a single sample of differences between males, husbands, and wives. So there's a lot of things written here, but it says, A, same in all respects, except replace the difference in ESS means between men and women with the mean difference in ESS between husbands and wives. So what's the matter with this response? It doesn't account for the... there's some coughs going on, but it sounds like it's saying that replace the difference in means with the mean difference. So algebraically, actually, that's equivalent. But if you keep everything the same, what is not changing, so maybe we should say, what did these look like? The two sample T said X bar minus X1 bar minus X2 bar, and then we divided by SP squared over N1 plus SP squared over N2. With the new analysis, what do we want to do? The paired analysis, T is equal to D bar over S of D bar, which is just the standard deviation of the differences over the square root of N. So A is incorrect because it says use the standard error based on these pooled variances. So that would be false. B says same as A, except also, so in addition to using D bar, also replace the standard error with the standard deviation of the husband-wife differences divided by the square root of the number of spouse pairs. That is the definition of a paired t-test, so B is true. And if we quickly go through C and D and E, shall we? Quickly. E says, same as A, except also replace the standard error appearing in the output with the standard deviation of husband-wife differences divided by the square root of the number of individuals. So that would have been the square root of 2 times N, which is not what we do in a paired t-test. D, same as the analysis presented on the previous page, except a new test for equality of variances should be conducted. False. We're not talking about two independent variances. We're talking about the variance of the difference between husband and wife. Same as analysis on page 7, except the degrees of freedom should be changed to the number of spouse pairs minus 1. So we wouldn't want to stick with a two-sample t-test, but just change the degrees of freedom. And so that's why that one is false as well. So is the recognition of this dependence or correlation in the husband-wife pairs. And now, Eureka, we're on number 20. Number 20. After the new study is completed, the researchers analyze the data using what was done before, what we'll call the two-sample analysis, and implementing the change also that was recommended in question 19. Now, I know it looks a little bit like this is linked, but the purpose of 19 was that these were pairs, so 19 should have been changing things to account for the pairs. Then these researchers find that the difference between men and women is not significant in the two-sample t-test, but it is significant after implementing the change. So what should they conclude? A, they should use the two-sample analysis as the more conservative of the two. So you don't use a result as being conservative if the method was incorrect. So this would be false because you wouldn't want to use the two-sample t-test because it's not the right study design. This was a paired study design of husband-wife pairs. B, they should choose the analysis implementing your recommended change because it yields a significant finding. Right? So this is saying you're going to choose the test that gives you a statistically significant result? False. Okay. C, they should choose the two-sample analysis as the one that is most commonly used and thus more interpretable to the scientific community. Shouldn't be commonly used for paired data. So that's false. D, they should ignore the two-sample analysis as invalid because the assumptions it makes are not met, meaning the independence of males and females, and report the analysis implementing your recommended change, which was the paired t-test. That's true. And then how about E? They should just declare the findings as being inconsistent and recommend another study. What? So they are inconsistent, and why are they inconsistent? The two-sample test is invalid because it's assuming two independent samples. The paired test would be the appropriate method because of the way the data were collected on these matched husband-wife pairs of individuals. So that is the end, and I wish you all a good night. Okay. Thank you for withstanding and enduring, and I'm still here if you have some questions.